listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne's going to be with us shortly, and we have a special guest with us here today. He's been on the show a few times before, and we're going to bring him back today and kind of get some updates with our guest Brennan and see, get some updates with his career and what's been going on. So, Brennan, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back. Always glad to have you back. So I think when you're on the show last, you were talking about your recovery and the things you're doing to maintain your recovery. And I know since that time, you've had some experience working as a recovery coach, as a paid recovery coach. And now you're looking to do that with more of a practitioner focus like I do, right? Like I have a practice, I see clients, that type of thing. So kind of catch up our listeners and viewers about the work you've been doing with youth and recovery coaching in youth.
Yeah. So for the past, I'd say 6 months or so, I'd been working at an actual facility. So teen boys rehab. And I learned a lot working at that program for sure. Learned a lot of the things that I like, that I feel like that I can use moving forward in my career and even in my own recovery, and also some things that I didn't like and stuff that honestly even kind of changed the way I view the trajectory of my own career in the recovery field. And so, yeah, it was a good little almost internship, if you will, for me to be there and learn some of those things for sure.
What, was it different than you thought it would be before you got into it in terms of?
I think so. Obviously with my own experience and programs, again, been in inpatient programs all across the country when I was getting sober myself, I've definitely experienced what, inpatient residential treatment programs are like, whether it's private rehabs, whether it's, state run rehabs, whether it's like a dual diagnosis medical facility, a faith-based, non-faith-based AA, I've been to them all. Right. And so I think I had a decent idea of what it would be like. And I think a lot of those things matched up. But obviously at the particular facility that I was working at, it's a facility for minors, specifically teen boys. And so obviously since I didn't go to a program when I was a teenager, that was a different experience. Just structurally, it's a little different anytime you're dealing with minors. And so, that was some of the areas there were different than anything I'd experienced before.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. So the curriculum maybe was a little bit different than you experienced in your
similar, so this is a dual diagnosis program, right? Mm-hmm. For that, insurance, all that. Mm-hmm. And I'd been to adult programs like that. So the programming was relatively similar. You have mandatory classes that you have to go to. There's mandatory one-on-one sessions for each client. And so structurally, a lot of those were the same, obviously not as jam packed full of groups and one-on-one sessions as some of the adult classes due to obvious, attention span differences with adolescents and then adults. But for the most part, they were structurally similar.
So, okay. So you had that more inpatient experience now. Mm-hmm. Looking at your own practice. I know you're working with some folks now.
Right.
Before we get into that though, I really want to, even with my practice, seeing folks that have come from places like you just came from, from like New Mexico Military Institute, from Marine Military Academy, from Discovery Academy, Utah. There's a wilderness program in like in Atlanta area. What else? Some of the other teen rehabs, Sundown and others. So I've had a lot of different folks come through here in an aftercare capacity, right?
Sure.
Aftercare capacity. And so one of the things, I guess we'll talk about that. Okay. So, and we'll see what your experience is. I know, for instance, some of the boarding school folks, I always make sure, if possible, to get the discharge summary or discharge paperwork from the parents or something, you know, so that, right? So when this person sees me for aftercare, whether it be aftercare counseling, aftercare, even coaching, right? That I feel like for the first at least month or so, I want to carry the torch, provided it's a good torch, but carry the torch of the receiving, of the sending facility, right?
For sure.
And then as the person acclimates, gets used to being at home or at school or whatever, then more new goals can be formed and relationship takes on another level. So what are your thoughts about that? I know you're seeing some folks that have exited from some structured programs. And
I'll speak to that within the context of adolescence. Why don't we do that? Okay. So within the context, So when an adolescent leaves a program, right? And this is again similar kind of with adults, but what a program does essentially, I would say I'd step out there and say 80% of the time is just get someone sober. It creates a little bit of distance between the addict and the lifestyle, right? They get some time, clear their head, get some clean time, whether that's 28 days or 90 days, they get a semi-substantial amount of consecutive sobriety. And of course, it's ideal to have that information when the adolescent's coming out of a treatment center to have the discharge paperwork and the behavior contracts and the aftercare plan and all that. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's 100% required. It'd be beneficial, but I wouldn't say it's required, because in the program, what they're taking groups, they're having sessions, they're looking at coping skills, they're looking at triggers, they're looking at those things. And I can speak for myself, what I do after they exit the program as far as coaching and mentorship is simply just to develop a relationship with the individual, right? With the team. And so, that's where I've seen the most success with my own sponsor and my own mentors in recovery. And I feel like, you know, that's something that if the relationship dynamic even almost mirrors the dynamic that they had with their counselors or with their therapists or with their program leaders, I feel like it's not going to be as beneficial. Like I've told the families of the kids that, you know, that I'm working with, look, I'm not their therapist. I don't want to be their therapist.
Right.
That's not the context of our relationship. I don't feel like I can be as beneficial to the family and to the team if I'm acting as a like, you know, pseudo therapist in a way. Right. And so, I strictly keep it to, you know, just coaching, mentorship, and really just having a relationship with the individual where they feel like they can open up and take, you know, guidance on a personal level about things that they wouldn't open up with to a therapist.
I agree with you, right? That you want to have that alliance and that relationship with your client. 100%, right? But also I know you're saying this, I just don't want it to get lost, but also you're holding that client accountable. You're helping them stay sober. You're giving them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes the way in which, again, I'll speak for myself, that I do that won't exactly mirror 100% how maybe the treatment center mapped out for them to do that. For example, I've had a client, they came out of their program and they had a behavior contract that the therapist wrote for them. Now, obviously, we don't want to allow the individual to what we call counsel shop and pick which counsel they like to take and stuff. But at the same time, we also have to put together a program that they're actually going to work, that they feel some sort of ownership with. And that's what I do is because if the client doesn't feel like they have some sort of ownership and personal investment into their plan, then the second that they don't, that they're not forced to, and they have the ability to stray from that, boom, they're going to do it. So if you're looking for lasting change in the team, and that's something that they're going to need to have the ability to do.
Right. And I know that you're on the way to get some of the, hopefully you'll be getting the same certification that myself has.
Sure. Has,
Neil has.
Right.
Even just have it. I think everybody on here on this show has had mm-hmm. the life coaching training. And so, mm-hmm. and you're right. I mean, that's what differentiates the coaching, in that you can set those goals, and it can be way more client focused in the coaching format, right? Way more client focused versus what I think is best for you.
Right. Exactly. It's less clinical and it's more client focused and even family focused. Like, for example, I sat down with the family and we spent probably 3 hours with me and the family and the individual sitting down and kind of drafting in a behavior agreement that all parties agree to. That way the family's personally invested in it. That way the client's personally invested in it. That way it's coming from someone who's been through it before. And I feel like, that's something that's going to produce a little bit more a lasting change. Now, that's not to replace therapy. For like one of the clients that I see, he still sees a therapist, a professional licensed therapist, and he does that on a weekly basis. And the therapist is going to be able to address, more things like projection and some of the more cognitive things, whereas, in a coaching aspect, I'm looking at, a recovery standpoint, a goal-oriented plan. And, I think the combination of those really is the right kind of help for someone's kid.
Absolutely. Having both of those, because the cognitive behavioral work can encourage the client to make better choices and make the next right decision. And then it can help with your, relapse prevention, if you will, your relapse mm-hmm. prevention efforts. So I think that's really good. I think one of the problems that you're going to have, I don't think it's a problem, but you're going to have to be really careful, because once you have that CLC, it's a CLC certification now, certified. Mm-hmm. But you have that CLC certification, people will push you into that, almost that therapist role.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I've already even seen bits of that thus far. And that's when I have to remind them and essentially say what I just said, which is that, look, like the relationship that I have with your son is not in the context of a therapist, client type of relationship. It's a mentor mentee type deal. And, that's the type of relationship that I feel that I can work best with a client, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, so you're going to have to, you'll be constantly, trying to stay in your lane and not get pushed into other lanes,
For sure. And, I think a lot of these kids, if you think about the culture nowadays and the culture that the adolescents are in, right? I think a lot of them, when they think about legitimate sobriety, when they hear about sobriety, and I know I can speak for myself, when I was close to that age, even a little bit older, I can only imagine how it is for kids in their, 16, 17 year old kids. they think of it as super boring. They think of it as you being kind of a square, having kind of a non-exciting lifestyle. And, you know, that's something that I try to bring for them, is to show that you can have, you know, a lifestyle that's successful, where you're having fun, you're able to travel, you're doing lots of fun things. You have meaningful relationships and overall just being cool. Right. And I think I think that alone earns so much credibility, with the teens, just having someone that they can relate to, someone who knows their lingo, kind of listens to the same stuff as them, kind of, you know, is familiar with their culture. I think that alone gives you a huge in with them in order for them to be able to open up stuff and actually, you know, take you seriously on some stuff. For example, when I was, oh, there we go. There's Mr. Wayne.
Hey, Brandon.
How's it going?
Good. One thing to learn is never be late. I've been trying to get on here for 15 minutes.
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so I think that is something that you that's a clear differentiation point between a guy like me that sees a lot of adults versus a guy like you who'll be seeing a lot of adolescents. So I know Wayne likes props, but here's my Donald Trump. I don't want our listeners to get any ideas, but this is like, this is kind of like a little toy, right? And so when I was maybe, what, 6 years old to about maybe, God, 10, maybe 11, I was fascinated with my toys and my Hot Wheels. You know what I mean? Like, that was my stuff. You know, if you messed with my stuff, you were in deep trouble. But the people you're working with want the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
And they say, oh, recovery's boring. Man, that flies right into the face of one of the biggest teenage thing is the experience, the high, or the arousal, if you will, of the experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's tough.
Well, and for sure. And I think, you know, with how the culture is, it tells them the lie that there is no other, you know, young human experience that's going to give them the kind of excitement that they're going to have unless they're smoking weed and drinking and going to parties and all that. And I think just by living the recovery lifestyle that I do and that my mentor does and that, you know, a couple other people that I know and I'm close with does, I think that alone opens the door for a conversation to be had on that subject. And, you know, in working at the program, I wouldn't approach it. I wouldn't say, hey, let's sit down and let me read a page out of the big book to you. Let me tell you my story. And I would just kind of be a friend to them, talk to them, you know, in their kind of language, just hang out with them. And they would ask me, they're like, man, so you don't drink? So you don't even smoke or anything? And I'd be like, no. And they're like, why, man? Like, you're so cool. Like, how do you not drink or smoke or any of that? And then boom, that allows me to go in there and kind of have that conversation with them.
Sure.
And it happens naturally instead of, you know, them learning something about coping skills from a program manager, right? That's a real natural interaction there that I think gives them stuff to think about. And even if they don't take that to heart, because a lot of them will leave and they'll go out and they'll, you know, do their thing. But what I've said, they'll stay in their head, you know?
Yeah. And these things that are necessary activities, like, you know, you have certain relationships with your sponsor and a couple of friends. You have a couple of good family relationships for sure. You know, you've got work, you got school, you got other things that are activities.
Right.
Right. They're just straight up. And so, I mean, I almost like that replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Not even explaining it to them. Just like, hey, do this, do this, do this. You think you're willing to try this, try this, try this.
For sure.
I like to make people more human doings than human beings, you know, at first. And then we kind of sort it out. But I think if you just kind of let them know, hey, you know, the activities that I do my activities of daily living or whatever, right, are sources of strength and positivity and excitement, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to, unless the adolescent has already, their addiction has progressed to where they've already had lasting consequences, real hurt, you know, stuff like that, which the majority of them haven't, unless they've had that, then you just go into an adolescent and saying, hey, we need to focus on getting sober. We need to identify triggers. We need to, that's likely going to fall flat on them. And so what I try to do is just to focus on their goals. Hey, what are your goals? What do you want? Like, what do you want this year? What do you want when you get out of this program? What would you like? And then we look at how to get there. And then sobriety almost comes as a byproduct, because smoking weed and sipping fake lean, you know, that doesn't exactly help them get to the goals that they're trying to get to. And I don't even have to say that or tell them, hey, no, like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. They kind of realize that on their own. And so that's what I try to do with them. And that way they almost, they work their program on themselves in a way.
Right. And then saying, well, if you want those things, the platform of sobriety, abstinence, yeah, that's a way to get those things. And that's a real nice technique to connect that core concept in with the adolescent's goals, mm-hmm. right? That they went over that with you. So I think that's real good. I think also what's really good about your situation is that you'll be able to, as a coach, you're not relegated to an office environment. You're not relegated to an institution environment.
Exactly.
So that client can come to you. You can go to that client. You can meet the client in a public place. Mm-hmm. You're more than free to, eat a meal with the client or whatever. So I remember in 2014, I started some executive coaching, and I had to fly up to what was it, Milwaukee, Wayne. I went pheasant hunting with the client, and I also was with the CEO of Harley Davidson, Wayne. Oh, but they were up there anyhow. But I felt so like, oh my God, I'm actually working, but I'm shooting pheasant, but I'm chilling with these other people. It was hard for me to make, you know, that transition from the office counselor to here I am coaching somebody, and it was wild, man. And it's pretty cool, because this guy's our executive coach. We want him too. It's pretty funny, man. It really kind of, there's some humor and stuff like that, but it really because of that, participating and flying up there, it really helped me out in a lot of ways. Anyway, so I'm just saying that's something that I know. I think you said you're going to travel a couple of hours west to visit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's meeting people where they're at, obviously, literally and figuratively, right? Like, you're meeting them in the real world. I think there's a therapeutic element to that alone. Meeting people in, you know, out in, like you said, public spaces, at their house. We can actually, you know, do things, you know, do fun stuff to get stuff like that, man, where it's a real relationship. Because I think just even subconsciously, when people go into a therapist's office or they're in a program, in a group setting, you know, they kind of have somewhat of a filter on the way that they talk, what they open up about, how they act. In that one-on-one, in the real world type of mentorship/coaching, I think that just puts them in a different headspace off the rip, right? And so, I stray away from urging them to make any long-term commitments when it comes to sobriety, right? Like, I never come in and say, hey, like, if you're going to work with me, you got to commit to being sober the rest of your life. Like, that's going to fall flat. That's going to kill the program before it even starts. I don't even, to be honest, and this may sound a little bit controversial, but I don't even talk about sobriety. I don't talk about sobriety. I don't talk about quitting smoking. I don't talk about quitting drinking. I talk about how do we help you win? How do we help? Let's give this a month. Let's look at for the next 30 days, how to get you in a better spot where you got more of the things that you want and you're moving in a direction that you feel better about. How do we look at that? We can reassess in 30 days. In 30 days, if you feel like, oh, I don't want to do this, I want to go back to smoking weed and getting sent back to another inpatient program. If you feel that way, we'll look at that then. But give me this 30 days and let's get you in a good spot.
I want to hear what Wayne has to say. Well, when you said, I want to see you win. I was thinking about Wayne and expert.
Brandon, I'm learning a lot just listening. I mean, you know, you've got it right. When a lot of times it's, and Bruce, when you said you went to Wisconsin and pheasant hunted, yeah. You know, when you get out into someone else's environment, mm-hmm. they're comfortable in. It doesn't matter, mm-hmm. like you say, if it's in a coffee shop, a restaurant, or in their house, or wherever they're comfortable. And you want to, you know, you ask them a question. What do you want? And they're more apt to listen. And just, have you ever played golf? You know, one of the biggest things that I enjoyed about playing golf was you got 4 hours on a golf course. Oh,
4 hours.
And I mean, if you're with somebody that you're in the same business with, for an example, mm-hmm. You know how much you can learn?
Yeah.
If you listen and talk, because you're all relaxed, you know, you're more, a lot of times, Brennan, you mentioned it. If you just ask the questions, they'll come to the conclusions.
Right.
And then you can help them get along and get there. But, you know, Bruce, this is Brendan's first time. So, you know, I always like to show the ears. You got to have a big set of ears. And that's what, when you listen to them, a lot of times they'll figure it out. They actually already know, but they just have to be able to verbalize it and
exactly.
say it and accept it.
Exactly.
So pretty interesting. I like the, and the way that your youth comes out, holy moly.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And boy, I'll tell you what, the world needs more young people like you in coaching and counseling.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that, Wayne. And yeah, it's, you know, sobriety should be a byproduct, right? An old sponsor, not my current sponsor, but an old sponsor told me this saying. And he said that if your recovery isn't better than you're using, you're going to go back to your using every time. So instead of just focusing on strictly like, how do I not use, you should be looking at how can I make my recovery more desirable than the lifestyle I had when I was using? How can I create things that I do in my recovery to give me a similar rush that I had with my using, right? And I think with that mindset building, and then slowly over time, you get a month, then you get 3 months, then you get six. The more you build on that, there's more to throw away. Whereas a lot of these kids, they have nothing, nothing behind their name. They got no privileges. They feel like they have nothing really going for them. They're not moving in any direction. They're bored. No meaningful relationship. Parents are annoying me. And man, if I get the chance to feel differently by drinking or smoking or popping a pill, I'm going to do that because I want to feel different. And so it's like, how can we make real life give us those feelings of comfort, of excitement, of contentment, of fun? And it's looking at how do we implement those kind of core values into our day-to-day life? Then we look at making a routine. It's like, let's get in a routine where every day we're working towards something. We're adding a physical element, we're adding a spiritual element, we're getting our body used to some sort of discipline. When it comes to some of these character development things, it starts with discipline, right? Discipline, and then you have a desire. It starts with discipline. And when you discipline yourself for a while, then you start to have a desire for those things, and then you end up delighting in those things, right? But it all starts with discipline. So, you know, and that's what I, and that builds fast. Like, you know, you get a guy in the gym, they see progress in 2-3 weeks, boom, that's something they can build on. Then that spills over into other areas of their life. And before you know, we got some momentum. And when that drink is placed in front of them, when they got a chance to go run off with their friends, then all of a sudden they're like, hey, I'm throwing away all this I just worked for. Instead of when they were at square one, it's like, oh, it's there. I got nothing going anyways. I might as well, so I can feel good. And that's the goal I have for each client that I work with.
I'll tell you, it's amazing. I used to smoke
cigarettes. Yeah.
I tried smoking that other stuff twice in my life, and first of all, I sweat through a sport jacket and threw up my socks. So yeah. I was allergic to it, I guess, but thank goodness. But
right.
I smoked a long time, but I just up and, you know, a guy says, is it hard to quit? I said, no, I've quit 1,000 times. It's real easy to quit. It's just hard to stay.
Right.
Not smoking. So one time I just put them down and, you know, I don't remember the day, but I remember when it was kind of in July, first part of July, and that was years ago. And, you know, I don't, I always think about that when it kind of rolls around, or when I walk around and smell cigarettes, you know, where you walk through a place where people are smoking outside now. And I can't imagine, I probably never would have smoked if you couldn't smoke inside, but I never skipped a class or anything. But, you know, when you get that reward of not doing something that, you know, is not, it's just not good for an example.
Right.
But when you feel that reward, you don't want to, and you, it's easy. It gets easier and easier. And I'm telling you, it's just like, no, you get happy. Bruce, I got invited by my son to go to the Ranger game yesterday, and we were in Rafael Palmero's suite.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And it cost me $10 because this guy that Andrew knows gets it every now and then, given to him. He knows Raphael. And we just all collect, everybody in there holds 50 people, gives 10 bucks, and you give it to the girl that does the food and beverage thing, you know. Or, but they had booze up there, and I'll drink a beer. I just didn't, wasn't in the groove, but I ate hot dog and had a grand time. But, you know, I just can't imagine having to step outside to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. So you get this feeling of not only accomplishment, but it's you said it, the discipline, but then the reward. How did you, wait a minute, you had discipline? Give me those, you had 3 D.
Discipline, like it starts with discipline, then you start to have a desire, and then after that it's a delight.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Desire, delight.
It's like a sermon. Yeah, man.
I got to write that down. I like that a lot.
Southern Baptist sermon, man.
It's good and it's true. You know, those little phrases are sometimes corny, but man, it's true. And I've seen it be true in my own life. Like it, you know, but it all starts with discipline, man. And, you know, being able to discipline yourself and receive correction and allow someone to hold you accountability. And just those things that are, you know, at the very start of your recovery are oftentimes the most difficult. You know, like the culture nowadays, it almost breeds young addicts with the instant gratification, with, you know, just a fast paced, you know, lifestyle, society, high pressure. Everything's easily accessible. The music they listen to is all, you know, related to drugs and partying. And so, you know, I think we're unfortunately only going to see a lot more of that in the years to come. And that's why I think we need young people to stand up who are having success. Like, nah, there's another way. There's another way to have fun and live a healthy, meaningful lifestyle where you're not a dork. You're not a square. You're not a, you know, just some kind of oddball and without doing those things. You know, and so that's my passion. That's my goal, is to help these young men get that in their own lives, and then for them to turn around and do that for someone else, you know.
I had a friend that, believe it or not, Bruce, I've had friends in my life, but I had a good friend. This is Elton. Okay, remember the guy?
Oh yeah, my man.
Well, his wife was. They were precious people. Seriously, I mean, Pat was just precious. And she, a little bitty Cherokee lady, and she smoked. Everybody smoked way long time. And she was trying to quit. And I would talk to her on the phone, and she'd cry. It's literally cry on the phone. Said, I smoked 5 cigarettes today. And I said, well, where's the bell? Where's the bell? Let's ring the bell. Let's ring the bell. Because I said, Pat, that's 15 less than you normally do.
That's right.
I said, man, let's celebrate. That's a big deal. And she finally did, you know, completely quit. But, you know, sometimes we forget that we can, when we're talking to people that have addictions or challenges, that celebrate the small victories, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything is a victory. Carve it into your gun, into the handle of your gun, man, you got another one.
Absolutely.
So it's because it's something that John Maxwell says that really gets me, that is, we don't say enough that you're valuable. Right. You know, you're a valuable person, and we need to, we should value everyone. And sometimes we have to look in the mirror and value ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that part about celebrating the small victories for sure. I mean, I think that's how you gain momentum in the positive direction. You know, I feel like it's, you know, we want to be self-reflective and looking for areas where we can improve. But at the same time, I think some of the best ways that we do that is by acknowledging the victories, right? I think that gives us the momentum to keep going and reach those places where we didn't think we could go based on where we've already been and where we were, you know? And so I think that's something I've used, that same kind of that phrase, but celebrate the small victories with some of the guys, the young men that I talk to. Absolutely.
Just celebrate with something besides what they've been doing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just kidding, but it is something that you're touching on that even as an old man, I can see it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Really, every song that you hear, I don't listen to that rap stuff except when it's in the news and it says what it says. And I'm going, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Kids are hearing today and they're like, that's what they're all about today.
And right.
When the craziest thing I heard was Jimmy Dean singing, I won't go hunting with you, Jake, but I'll go chasing women, you know? Or smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. It's just so, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And the world needs young people, because the people that you're talking to, mm-hmm, more than likely couldn't relate to a man like me. I probably couldn't, you know, I'd just be, there's no way I could get them in touch. They'd never consider me. They'd never let me in the clubhouse because I don't know the password.
Right. No, I think, and that's the thing about the coaching relationship is really good. Yeah, I find a lot on the people I don't coach, I have just 1 hour, and that might be 1 hour this week, and I don't see them again for maybe 2 other weeks. So I got to cram all this stuff in, right, in that 1 hour. And it's hard to do, you know what I mean? You're not really augmenting the relationship per se or whatever, but certainly not as much if it was like in a coaching frequency and pace and stuff like that. So that is the great thing about the youth, coaching youth, man, is spending time with them. And there's one thing that I remember is quantity time with youth. You know, you'll hear the dads that are too busy say, oh, I've spent quality time with them. It really, at the end of the day, it's quantity time. And so you're spending quantity time with your client, you know, and
right.
And that in itself is just going to be an environment that fosters positive growth and change just by being with the client and nudging, helping them make good choices. Yeah.
And letting them have that access. Like when you think about most teens and the teens who are struggling with these issues that we're talking about, you think about the people they have in their life. And let's say best case scenario, right? They got this is best case scenario. They have, you know, two parents, right? They may have a couple siblings. And then if they're messing up, they probably have a whole lot of bad friends and maybe one, two, maybe three good friends. So when mom or dad says something that pisses them off, or they're feeling down, or they're feeling tempted, or they're feeling any type of way, restless, oh, I can't wait to be here, oh, I wish I could have this and that, who do they go to when they're feeling like that in those moments? They usually do one of two things. They either internalize it, right? And then you start to see that, you know, get projected out through their behaviors. Or you see them turn into their friends to vent about that, and then they get more bad counsel, and the friends add fuel on the fire. And then the next thing you know, they add out, or they'll make an impulse decision, and they got lasting consequences for that, or they're in a worse position they were to start off with. So I think just having me there, you know, 24/7 access to me, gives them someone else, just giving them another positive option to turn to in those moments, right? And I think that does give me an advantage over people, like, you know, we were saying that when you got an hour set in, not to say there can't be big growth done in those sessions and they can leave with stuff that they can implement. But I think having a real tangible person to, man, when I pick up that phone, he's going to answer and he's going to give me sound advice. I mean, you know, that's priceless.
That is priceless. But that's wild. That is well stated. Well stated,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's a team. That's when you become a team.
And for families too, because a lot of families, they don't especially if it's kind of the first wave of addiction in that family, if the mom and dad don't struggle with addiction, their parents didn't struggle with addiction, they likely know someone, but it probably hasn't hit close to home like it would with their own kid. And a lot of them, they don't know how to react. Their kid does this. Well, what do I do? Like, how do I handle this? Am I enabling him, or am I being too hard on him? And it's finding that balance and, you know, having someone who's been through that with, you know, with their family, been through that personally. I think that gives them the ability to kind of better navigate those situations. Because it is, a lot of it is confusing. You know, I talk to parents all day, you know, and they're, well, should, you know, is this giving him the wrong impression? Are we, is this a battle that we should pick? Because I know we have to pick our battles. Or is this enabling him? Or does this send the wrong message to him? And these are families who care about their kid and just want to see their kid do well. And a lot of times they genuinely don't know the right play to do with their kid. And I think having, you know, someone readily available for them as well is also a huge asset.
Right. Absolutely. And I know on one of your clients, you gave a monthly fee, which was good and able to get that and garner that. And so I think that's genius. I always went the opposite direction. I put in the time, did the invoice, and it was net 30, but good stuff that you're able to get that, get a good solid flat fee.
We do a monthly deal. I don't know if you remember before when I referenced, when I talked to the client, I said, look, let's work on this for a month, right? Yeah. I do the same thing with the parents. Let's look at this for a month. Let's work.
Freedom and, if necessary, right?
Do what now?
It gives you the freedom to increase it the next month if.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and we're not limited. They see the value within the first month, you know, because they have access, you know, they have access to some and all those things I just said, you know, when they're going through this with their kid. And even I'll say an example, you know, the family with one of the clients, they found a pill that was in the client's room and they didn't know what it was. They're like, is this a drug? Well, you know, unfortunately, but I guess fortunately now, you know, I knew what the pill was. It wasn't a narcotic. It was like this off-brand pill you can get from a smoke shop that gives you a mild sedation effect. Knew exactly what it was, told them what it was. This is what it is. And then was able to confront the client about it, and they admitted it and stuff. But you think otherwise, put yourself in those parents' shoes. It's like they don't know what this is. And then they got to ask their kid's going to lie, you know, and then it's just, man, we never really get any real answers out of that stuff.
Yeah, going guns blazing, you know.
And yeah, they go, well, what is this? Is this, yeah. an oxy, you know, and then the kid's like, no, why are you accusing me? And then boom, it's just, it throws fuel on the fire. And so just having someone there who, you know, definitely is familiar with those things and can kind of help them. But aside from that, just being able to, you know, the day-to-day stuff. And look, honestly, the majority of the issues with these kids are not the smoking or the drinking or the pills. It's the behavioral issues. It's the, right. It's the dynamic that they have with their kid, the communication issues. You know, I can speak for myself. When I was in that phase of my life, I expected my parents to be perfect in how they handled me. Even when I would mess up, I expected them to be perfect and not show any emotion, even though I'm wreaking havoc in everyone's life through my addiction. I expected them to be perfect. And I think helping the child understand that, hey, like, you know, they're going to have emotions too. Like, mom's going to say stuff she doesn't mean because you know, you're acting out in front of the other kids. You're bringing stuff into the house. You're running off. Like, put yourself in their shoes. Do you want to have kids one day? You know, imagine how you would feel getting them to see that type of deal, and just having a third party to communicate who's unbiased and kind of help find the communication between all parties. Again, I mean, I think that's priceless, you know?
Oh, it is. It is. So, well, good, man. It sounds like you're really off to a good, you know, a good start with this. I know that you're in the process of building your web presence, Facebook page, LinkedIn. I know probably give out your name for LinkedIn, because you'll probably be the only Brennan Cameron on LinkedIn. Especially that looks like you. There's another guy, but he's a spinal surgeon.
Definitely, that's definitely not me for sure.
Yeah, out of Houston, I think, and they flip him. He's always Cameron Brennan or Brennan Cameron, but it's always spine surgeon. So I was checking that out on search engine optimization and stuff like that in terms of your marketing and, or, you know, your presence online. So maybe one of the next times we have you on here, we'll talk about your progress.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, with that. And Wayne, he's going to get his Orange County credential here pretty soon.
Awesome. You're going to find it good. I mean, you already probably have it.
No.
Seriously, but you're going to get it in a different way.
Mind expanding, man. I mean, I when I went through that program and I read that binder, I really kind of plugged in my own goals and thoughts to these coaching paradigms. And it was mind expanding
You think, Bruce, there's a coaching opportunity down in Uvalde?
Oh, wow. Yeah, just everywhere.
With policemen?
Yeah, yeah.
There's 400 of them need coached, I think. So.
I've done that with branch managers of armored car companies that lost staff, you know, and their staff was killed on shift. Anyway.
Yep.
We'll
get started. Yeah. Brandon, I'm proud of you. Yeah, I tell you, somebody, of course, you know, I'm prejudiced. I know your dad from down the road somewhere, but I'm proud of you. And boy, keep it up. I can't wait to see you on here again. And sorry I was trying to
have
some difficulties.
Oh, no, man. Glad to be on here for sure. I think, you know, we definitely made a lot of good points together for sure. I hope.
I don't know if this will come through. It's not going to. My arrow. I got a lot of props. This is one of those Steve Martin ones.
As the arrow through the head. Okay.
Yeah, man, it doesn't come through with that background. But
I need to get some props the next time I come on here. I feel left out. I'm going to have to get some props.
There it is. That's one thing I do a lot of Zoom calls, and I got a lot of props.
Well, you know what, folks? That's it, man. That's a wrap. We're out of time for this week. So thanks for coming, and Brennan, we'll get you on here again real soon, folks.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
And Brennan Cameron, and we'll be on LinkedIn, and we'll have him back with some other stuff. And remember to catch us every Monday at this time on the Concierge Coaches Show, LA Talk Radio. We're at concierge_coaches on Instagram and Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. So with that, everybody, have a safe week, and we'll see you here next time. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.